Well, I have a wonderful electronic invention I want you to see. It looks something like this.
What's up, Curiosity Builders? I'm Chris Martin, and you're listening to Getting Work to Work, a weekly podcast for creative entrepreneurs and leaders looking to grow, not only by learning new things, but by connecting their work to big ideas and overcoming the barriers that prevent them from doing the work they were born to do. Today's interview episode of Getting Work to Work is the fourth in a four-part series promoting Design Week Portland, a week-long, all-inclusive festival celebrating the projects and processes as told by a creative community across many disciplines. In these interviews, you've met amazing creatives who are not only producing great work, but also giving back and building a community of equality. Learn more about Design Week Portland at designportland.org. Now that the stage is set, I would like to introduce you to Celeste Noche and Emily Prado, the people behind Portland in Color, an amazing website, database, and journal celebrating the city's artists of color. In this conversation, Celeste and Emily share about the origins of the project, the importance of building trust by honoring and respecting each person's story, and how building this community has impacted their work. Show notes and links for this episode can be found at gwtw.co/257. Celeste, Emily, welcome to Getting Work to Work. Why don't you introduce yourselves and share a little bit about who you are and the work you do?
Sure. Thank you so much for having us. Mm-hmm. I'm Celeste. I'm a photographer freelance. I'm from California, from the Bay Area. I've been living up here in Portland for about 5 years now. I shoot primarily like documentary and editorial work. And in the last few years have sort of tried to shape my work towards documenting more underrepresented and marginalized communities.
Wow.
And my name's Emily. I am also from the Bay Area. I've lived in Portland for about 10 years now. Mm-hmm. My work is primarily focused on freelance journalism. I also am working with schools a lot to help coordinate and also teach creative writing. Cool. And beyond that, I also do, I'm a DJ with Noche Libre, which is a Latinx DJ collective, as well as a lot of other things. Yeah. Designing, actually, some freelance design, some freelance photography.
She does it all.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's awesome is like there's this collective power of just creativity. How amazing is that?
Yeah.
No, we're quite the power couple.
It's true.
Yeah.
We grew up, I think, maybe like a 10-minute drive away from each other. It's really weird.
And did you know each other, or did you just meet each other in Portland all these years later?
We met in Portland all these years later. We used to work for the same tech company, but we didn't really like work on the same team or anything then. And then once we both like separately started freelancing, our paths just kept crossing. And Emily actually wrote about Portland in Color for Street Roots, which is a local independent street paper. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up featuring her on the series. And then later on, the series wasn't sustainable for me to keep working on by myself. And I knew Emily was like a really talented writer. And I asked her if she could help apply for grants. And then she just like very graciously like adopted like Portland in Color too, and has been part of the team ever since, like helping us sort of reshape everything and focus like our goals and our reach and what we're doing.
So the main focus of this interview is Portland in Color, which is an amazing website, database, and journal celebrating the city's artists of color. So let's kind of take it back to the beginning. Celeste, you began the projects as a photo series in 2017. What was your inspiration for the project?
Well, coming from the Bay Area and moving to Portland was a big culture shock, I think, definitely for me, but probably also for Emily. And I think in general for any POC who move here, I think Portland has like a reputation of being very progressive and forward thinking, which I think is pretty true, but the lack of diversity here can be really jarring and also isolating if you're new and you don't know anyone. For me, I had a really hard time breaking into the freelance photography industry. After I think maybe a year or two, I still hadn't really felt like I had a community, whether professionally or just personally. By complete happenstance, I joined an online group for POC creatives. And in that group, I found just like so many great and talented people who really like championed each other's work and also just different like industry principles, which I hadn't seen. Other photographers and artists that I had spoken to outside of this group were really about like just doing free work as much as possible until you could get your foot in the door. Mm-hmm. But within this group, there were a lot more discussions about always like asking for payment for your work, recognizing your own value, and also just like, I don't know, just sharing resources, which wasn't a transparency I noticed in other places. And so it was just baffling to me to be in Portland and, you know, see such a homogenous representation of the city in the media, whether it was through like newspapers or magazines or like digital content. And, you know, when you ask, like, why isn't there more diversity in these spaces? A lot of people would say like, oh, there aren't any people of color in Portland, or I don't know any. And so the series was just a way to sort of a response to that, just to say, actually, there are like a lot of great and talented, diverse people here, and you can start looking.
That's awesome. As you photographed each artist, how was your world expanding as you interacted and engaged with them and heard their stories?
I'm really lucky as a photographer. When I shoot people, it's usually like a whole conversation that we're having. Part of it is, you know, to make them feel more comfortable for the photo, but also to learn more about them. So I'm taking images that are representative of who they are and hopefully that they feel really good about. And I think for me, it's just that, I don't know if this is true per se, but I don't know that a lot of these people would have had the coverage or like any photos of them in the same context if I hadn't taken the time, my own time, to take photos of them. And that really got me to think like how many stories from like incredible stories are we missing just because people aren't taking the time to look outside of their own circles. And so that makes me, I mean, just that idea reminds me that there's always content. There's always, and not even just content, but there's always stories and there's always things to learn from other people. Mm-hmm. So I've been really fortunate that people have trusted me both with their stories and also with a small glimpse of like their experiences.
Yeah. So Emily, what was your awareness of the project before you joined the team as operations director and features editor?
Yeah. So like Celeste mentioned, I had actually been featured on Portland in Color, but prior to that, I had seen Celeste posting on her blog and on Facebook links to Portland in Color. Mm-hmm. Like Celeste, I was also in that group for POC Creatives of Portland. Mm-hmm. And so I would see a lot of her work anyways and had a similar experience of prior to joining that group, feeling isolated from the community that I had an idea was out there, and then being able to connect with people once I was in that group. And so it was really important to me as a reporter. So my beat kind of has been focusing on uplifting the stories of folks from marginalized communities, whether that's people of color or queer people or people with disabilities. And so when I saw the project that she was working on, I really wanted to highlight that. And I thought Streetroots was the perfect platform for it. So yeah, that's where I first saw it and wanted to share it with a wider reach with Portland. And after I covered it, that's when we started to collaborate more, both with Portland in Color and then also doing a lot of projects of reporting together for Streetroots. Mm-hmm. But that was kind of the start of our formal working relationship and the start of a lot of press mm-hmm. coverage that came later. But that's often what it takes, kind of going back to the whole purpose of Portland in Color. It's the onus is often put on ourselves to tell our own stories and stories of people from our community. And this was kind of an example of when I started doing coverage, then other people started to learn about it. But if you don't have that network, then you're really missing out on a lot of different stories and connections that you could actually have if you widened your network.
Something interesting as I was looking at the site is that there's a button to submit yourself. But what I'm also hearing is that as a reporter, you're discovering the people that you want to cover as well. So I imagine that there's a mix between those two opportunities?
Yeah, for us, it's really important to have entry that is accessible. So mm-hmm. just because someone might not be well known from other people doesn't mean that their story isn't worth sharing. And honestly, we get so many submissions that we would love to feature every single person. And so there is a mix of seeking people out, but also looking at folks who have been proactive in reaching out to us. And often those are people who haven't had prior coverage. And for me, that's a more exciting opportunity to be the person to help them share their story for the first time. And it's a really special opportunity that we have with Portland in Color.
So how has the project evolved? You said earlier, Celeste, that it was an unsustainable project after a while, but now it's a whole lot more and you have a team. You know, how did that evolution happen?
Well, just to give you some more background context, when it was a photo series, it was really important for me to pay an honorarium to everyone that I featured, mainly because I was hearing a lot of stories in our community about publications or companies or media that wanted to use images of people from POC communities, but without any compensation, which to me, you know, seems really unfair because those companies are benefiting from their image and from their experiences, but not giving back to them in any way that was tangible. It was very nominal, but like paying an honorarium to everyone to me was a symbol of acknowledging the time it took for them to take their portrait and also fill out our interview, and also the use of their image, and also the emotional labor in telling their stories, because some of them, some of the stories are like very emotionally laborsome, like retelling really negative experiences to everyone else's benefit. Like by them sharing those things, they're allowing the greater community to understand what it's like, and they're not obligated to do it, but I just wanted to recognize that. So, you know, shooting all those portraits and paying those honorariums without paying myself, it just over time was like, just as much as I wanted to keep doing it, it wasn't sustainable because I freelance and also have to pay my bills. I actually tried applying for a separate grant on my own and didn't get it, and realized that, you know, especially for grants and like programs like that, they often like need like a very specific language that's not accessible to a lot of people. And Emily has like such a great background in understanding what that is and how to like cater to that request while still being true to your own voice and what you're saying. So partnering with her was like a really easy first step in trying to make the series more sustainable and give it more life beyond what I could offer just on my own. Just knowing that I personally couldn't keep like doing this on my own was really the impetus, but knowing that the stories were important and that they served like a greater purpose is why I wanted to keep doing it, and knew that it was time to start reaching out for more help.
And I would add actually too that as we worked together on that grant application, that really did end up shaping the future of what Portland in Color has evolved into. So part of it was we were trying to figure out what type of grant we wanted to apply for. And we realized that based on kind of what the overall mission was of Portland in Color, it made sense to have a sort of public-facing directory to widen the impact, and also then to be eligible for the art services grant that the Regional Arts and Culture Council had. So that was pretty encouraging for us to make, kind of give us the impetus for us to go through with trying to make that happen. And then furthermore, there's also like a public display or public event that needs to happen when you apply for those grants. And that's where the idea came for having a mixer where people from Portland in Color who have been featured or also who are in the directory could connect in person with people from the creative industry and have a chance to meet face to face, while also now serving as a way to fundraise for the platform, because the grant funding was a great start, but our funding
is limited
and runs out actually in May. So it's kind of informed. And also now we're in a place where we really do have to figure out what the next steps are to make sure that it can continue to evolve and continue to exist as a platform that clearly has been very well received and is important, but we need to continue to find out a way that it can be sustainable for both of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Emily was just talking about, we're hosting an event in May, which we haven't like formally announced yet, but we will soon once we have more logistics set up. But it is just another way to, you know, bring these connections in real life to people.
That's fantastic. I mean, to go from a photo series to a website, to a mixer, to collaboration, to really honoring these stories and the people. I mean, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
I mean, that's just something to celebrate. I mean, it's just, I don't know, it's just amazing.
Thanks.
I'm curious as to how you mentioned that it's well received. I wonder what some of the response has been.
I think we could split up the response versus like things that people have told us individually, but then also greater like media response, just as a photo series, but then also as it's grown more. The response that I've gotten from individuals has been really inspiring, because you know, if you don't hear anything from the media, then it often feels like your work is invisible and that it's not reaching anyone. But we've had people reach out just sending, you know, really great encouragement about appreciating the work that we're doing and recognizing the labor and that it's worthwhile. Then on top of that, we've been really fortunate that like a lot of local media has also seen our work and been excited to share it. So we were on Think Out Loud with OPB earlier in the year, right after we launched. Oh, we just had a piece in the Mercury come out, which was really great for their women's issue. And yeah, I mean, and more people have been like local agencies have also reached out about potential to collaborate or about ways that they can support us. So I think the ball is turning, or the wheel is turning, I guess, just been really great.
Are there any stories that you've heard over the years that you can't stop thinking about?
Well, I really liked the interview that we just did with Jay Dodd. She is an artist who just moved to Portland really recently. You can see her story on Portland in Color, but mm-hmm. I just felt like we had such a open conversation and I learned a lot about the work that they were doing and just they were really inspiring to me as far as how her projects have evolved from small ideas with like one story and then evolving into doing a film and then doing an art performance. And so her work was really inspiring to me. And honestly, everyone on Portland and Color, yeah. I love reading all their stories. And
it's really hard to have favorites because I think also too, just by nature, a lot of the, you know, the series exists because we feel like we don't get to see these stories in general. So every time we have the opportunity and people trust us with their stories, it's like, I don't know, it's like a whole thing to be able to learn more about someone else locally and mm-hmm. have so much information and talent and like inspiration in one person. Like that's how I feel every time I meet every single person that we've been able to feature.
Yeah, definitely.
We've just been really fortunate. And that's the thing, like, I think so far we've only featured in total like maybe 20 something people, and like we could keep going forever. Like there's so much talent here, and I don't know, we're really fortunate.
I really like that phrase you just said, trusting that you're going to honor their story or something like that, really involving trust in how you're telling the story. There's something there that is just so powerful in how you build that relationship with someone.
Yeah. And I think it's like an honor, but also a responsibility that we don't take lightly. I've had friends locally who've been covered in media who, you know, sometimes their story is shared to a certain extent, but just the way that it's told or with edits that are made, they mm-hmm. don't really, they aren't like completely honoring to what was shared with them. And I think that's just like general media bias, which mm-hmm. is an unfortunate thing that we as a society are still learning to deal with.
I think that also comes from like the lens through which it's told. So when we talk about like media bias, it's because the industry is typically run by white people who have not interacted a lot of times with BIPOC communities mm-hmm. and don't understand some of the context, and that kind of skews the way stories are told.
Yeah, there's like this othering that happens. And the fact that like this is a platform that we've built ourselves means that we can take that time to make sure that we're telling the stories in the way that feels the most true and representative of the people who are trusting us with them. So, and I know that with other publications that are bigger, they don't have that same control over, like, you know, they have different editors and things that they have to work with. So, I mean, I understand just like it's a professional or like an industry thing, but we're excited to have the opportunity to like sort of challenge what that means for the industry and sort of create a new way to look at things.
Yeah. And to be a shining example on how it can be different.
Yeah, exactly. It means a lot to us to be able to sort of rewrite the rule book, at least for ourselves.
That's awesome. So what kind of impact, you've mentioned response from the media, individual response. Are you seeing any impact in how you're having in the city as you profile people on Portland in Color? Are you seeing a shift in how people of color are being talked about or shared about?
It's hard to quantify anything like that. I would say the best examples that I can come up with are just hearing about job opportunities that have come up as a result of the directory or just through the features that we have. So I've had some people tell us that they were able to find like a writer that they were looking for or a graphic designer or whatever, just by like, they didn't know where to start and they wanted to diversify the pool that they were looking into. So by using our website, they were able to find more talent that they wouldn't have access to or know about otherwise. So that's really great. Yeah. But in terms of like Portland as a whole, that's really hard because, you know, it's like an entire city's foundation and system that's so ingrained in society that like it's not something that we can change, especially like ourselves. It's like a mentality that we're trying to have people rethink. But I do think that having a seat at the table in this context means that we're able to help reshape what that means for Portland, and hopefully it will lead to more positive change.
Yeah, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, exactly.
So how has working on this project changed your work?
Well, for me personally, I think the impact might be more tangible for me since I've been working on it for longer. I have had a lot of people reach out to me because of my work with Portland in Color, which has been really gratifying. And I think it goes to that whole idea that you sort of get the work that you show, because if you're only getting paid for something that you don't really like and that's all you share, then that's what you'll get hired for. So the fact that like this was a personal project that I was able to share, and even though it was like self-funded at the beginning, the fact that I was able to put it somewhere and have more eyes on it meant that the inquiries that I was receiving, or people were more interested in hiring me for for covering more diverse communities, like that meant a lot. Before, a lot of my work was geared more toward like stylized like editorial things, which, you know, are fine too, but sometimes they felt like a little empty because there wasn't a greater story that I was contributing to. And also because we're such strong advocates for paying the people that we feature, and also just advocating for pay versus like the excuse of exposure in lieu of payment, I've had more serious inquiries. I think people are more thoughtful about how they approach inquiries for work because they know that it's their responsibility to pay for the content they benefit from. So that's been great.
That's awesome.
Yeah. As far as my work, it's a little harder to quantify, I think, because I have been doing kind of similar work as far as like interviewing people. But I will say that I think, honestly, like Portland Color is what kicked off a lot of the collaboration that Celeste and I have been able to do together, which has led to some opportunities that I don't know would have been as powerful like doing it on my own. So what I'm specifically referring to is with Street Roots, actually, they received a grant to cover rural housing issues in Oregon. And Celeste and I were able to go on that trip together. So we went out to Ontario, Oregon, and having Celeste there was amazing to have a person focusing on one aspect of the story so that I could focus on the other aspect of the story. And we really powered together to bring those stories to life in a way that I think would not have been able to be done on our own. So that was one really great thing I think that's come from Portland of Color. And then I think kind of piggybacking on the idea of paying people and the importance of that, I will say that Celeste is a very vocal advocate of paying people for their work and for their labor. And just being around her has also inspired me to be more vocal with my own advocacy for myself, but also when working with other people. So yeah, it's a really positive, contagious thing to advocate for yourself and for other your labor people. And other people when we have been taught not to.
Yeah. There's this weird, like, I mean, the power structures within freelancing in general are so unequal, and the access, like, you know, there isn't like a central place where you can learn about how to navigate these spaces. So I would say that probably the most lasting like impact for this series and this collaboration is really relying on your community and knowing that, like, trusting people to like being vulnerable with the things that you care about and sharing them, and knowing that there are people who also share and care about the same things that you do, and that you're only stronger by like trying to work together. Versus, I think for me before, there was a really strong like incorrect to me, like mentality that it was all a competition, that everything should be for yourself and that don't share your ideas because someone could steal them. And I just feel like that's such a toxic, unfortunate way to go about the industry, about, you know, creating things, especially in an industry that can already be so isolating. So being able to collaborate with someone that you care about and whose work you admire can only strengthen your own, I think.
Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. This is just great. So Emily, you're leading a panel of artists at this year's Design Week Portland called Redesigning the Narrative. Can you tell me about the event?
Yeah. So we're really excited. Portland in Color has been invited to participate in Design Week. We have put together an exhibit of different artists and designers from the Portland in Color directory. And then of those handful, we have about 8 to 10 people participating. We've selected 3 people to then have on a panel where we'll discuss their work. And the people who are on that panel is Tracy Nguyen Chung, who is a designer supporting a new database called Brown Girls Doc Mafia, which is a directory for women and non-binary, BIPOC people in the documentary
industry.
Yeah. That is kind of mouthful. Wow. But,
yeah.
And then we'll also have Jen Tam, who is a comic as well as a freelance graphic designer and creator of Corn Con, which is a really fun annual festival highlighting the wonders of corn.
It's amazing. I hope people, it's just really great.
And then the third and final panelist that we have is Britton Washington, who is the founder of the PDX Billboard Project, which was started by PDX Equity in Action. And so that was a billboard series project that highlighted injustices in Portland, but specifically focused on the Black community in regards to like police brutality and the criminal justice system. So we're really excited to have those folks share their work with us and then also feature their work as well as the other people in the exhibit that we'll be having.
And sounds like a great opportunity to prepare people for the event in May.
Exactly. Yeah. We're, it kind of like all sort of fell together. We weren't actually planning to be part of Design Week until the 11th hour. Is that what it's called? I don't know. Whatever the last hour is. And so it's been a great way to focus like one on the design, like designers in our community. Whereas our event in May will be more open towards just all creative people. And we're also inviting like industry people, like editors and art directors and anyone who has reason to learn about local artists and like scout new talent. But yeah, we're really excited to have, I mean, for me, it's been such a online, like non-personal, not that's not personal, but like the reach has been mainly online since the beginning. So to have in-person events is really great.
And then I will add to that event that we're doing, it is sliding scale. So that was also important to us. Mm-hmm. And it's sliding scale because we are going to actually pay all the people who are in our exhibit and on the panel and are looking for sponsors to help support that. But beyond that, it's sliding scale so that it can be accessible at any level.
And for anyone who doesn't know what that means, we mean like sliding scale admission prices.
Yes.
So the rate I think we list is $5 to $20 suggested donation.
So what are you looking forward to apart from the amazing event that you're putting on? But what else are you looking forward to with Design Week Portland this year?
We're really like excited because we have friends who are also hosting events. So we're just going to plug them real quickly.
Yeah, so we're really excited to see Tender Table, which is a storytelling platform for women, trans men, and non-binary folks who are Black, Indigenous, or people of color. They'll be doing a pop-up as well as Seizure Palace, which is a really awesome screen printing studio in Southeast Portland that's been doing really rad work for at least a decade now, I think.
Oh, wow.
And then also there's a panel hosted by We Are Here, which is actually discussing the needs of LGBTQ plus creatives as well as creatives of color. So we're really excited to see all their work and support them as well.
Yeah, and to see just more space carved out for traditionally like marginalized or underrepresented folks, especially in like design and arts media industries. So It's really great. We're also really excited. We're teaming up with Visible, who is hosting a design tournament on the last day of Design Week. So we were actually chosen to be the organization that the whole tournament will be redesigning a logo for. Yeah, it's really exciting. They have this whole system where folks can enter to be part of the competition. And then there will be like a panel of judges along with us who will help decide the final design. But we're really excited because we're sort of helping, we're working with Visible to sort of remodel how they've done this tournament in the past by making more equitable access to people so that the barrier to entry is easier. So, you know, more reduced, like, reduced entry options so that people from different backgrounds can afford to enter, whereas in the past they might not have been able to. And also I'm collaborating with them to help choose the judges so that it's like a diverse panel and that it feels reflective of the work that we're doing as a brand as well.
This question that I want to ask is inspired from your blog, Celeste, and I was just kind of blown away by the depth that you're writing at in that blog post. And the question is, what does a world look like where the extra wasn't needed and where we could put our full hearts and equally distributed resources toward what we care about the most?
That quote or that little bit of writing was really inspired by some frustration that I experienced last year but also subconsciously in years past, where I think there's like an extra burden on marginalized artists and people in general to have like that extra conversation where they're addressing something that was problematic or harmful, or take those extra steps to explain why something should be some another way. And it's just addressing and acknowledging that for a lot of people, there's extra labor that goes into just existing, especially in the arts world, but also recognizing that there are entire populations of people who never have to have those conversations. Yeah. They can afford to not think about things like that and not have those difficult conversations because they don't affect them. And I think I just was at a point where I thought it's kind of unfair that those, like, some people have the privilege of never needing to have those conversations, and they get to spend all that time on just creating what they want or focusing on the work that they want to do. Whereas, you know, I think for like by POC communities, those conversations are non-negotiable. They have to have them. And so that's time that they've taken away from their own work that they could be creating to, you know, address something that is equally important to them. And just what would a world be like where we all didn't have to have those conversations and we could fully focus on the work that we are set out, like that we want to do. And maybe we could all have equally distributed resources to level the playing field. It's kind of like a dream. And it seems like I'm hoping that in the future for other generations, this will be something that is normal for them. But right now it's really hard to ignore the discrepancies and like resources and the privileges that affect some people and aren't afforded to other people, especially in the arts community. I think that people who have political or like social consciousness, but don't feel the need to engage in those conversations or do that labor, I don't think they often understand how much more is at their disposal just for the sake of time. Like, they're able to just keep working on whatever they want and they don't have to have these difficult conversations. Whereas for us, there's no other option. Like, you have to talk about this.
Thank you for sharing that. I think that's an important message to share and to hear, just so that, you know, because it brings context, I think, to some degree of what you're building with Portland in Color.
Yeah.
And why you pay people and why you make sure that you tell their story with truth and honesty and power.
Thanks. I think it's really inspired by that. Artists in general and creatives know how hard it is to, in our in our society in general. I think like our society wasn't built to make self-employed or freelance life easy. It's tax season. Just look right now. We're all aware. But to have that struggle on top of also the emotional labor that's often involved with being an underrepresented or like a marginalized person, it's just multiplied. What would the world be like? What kind of art would we see if we all had the same access to resources and could also spend our time the way we want to?
Oh, such a great question. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I've enjoyed talking with you both. And I just have one final question for you.
Sure.
What was the last book or podcast that blew your mind?
I keep revisiting a book called Too Much and Not the Mood by Jirga Chubos. It's a Canadian writer. It's a book of personal essays that talk about a lot about her upbringing, but also having immigrant parents, and just the way she writes is just, I don't know. It's amazing. I don't know how to explain it. I just hope people read it.
Yeah. And the book that I just recently read that blew my mind, but was really intense was Heavy by Kiese Lehmann. It is a memoir about like struggling with truth and violence in families, but also specifically against Black men and like young Black men in the U.S. And it was just a really powerful, emotional glimpse into a world that is a reality for a lot of people in our society and that we don't often hear the stories of. So I highly recommend it. And it's one of the most amazing books I've read recently.
Well, thank you, Celeste and Emily, for being guests on Getting Work to Work and sharing about Portland in Color and the work that you're doing. It's such an inspiration to hear from you and to be a part of your story for this briefest of moments. And I'm just so grateful for your time and the work that you're doing. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed speaking with you as well. Great. Yeah, thanks.
Throughout this episode, you've heard about an amazing big idea that Celeste and Emily are daily bringing to life with Portland in Color. And before we wrap up this episode of Getting Work to Work, I want to leave you with two questions. What big idea are you chasing, and how are you bringing it to life? Reach out and let me know. I'm Chris at chrismartinstudios.com, or you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at CM Studios. I really do love hearing from people, so if you need someone to share your ideas with or need encouragement, reach out and say hello. There are a lot of podcasts you could be listening to, and I'm grateful that you would spend valuable time listening to Getting Work to Work. Would you be willing to spread the word about the show with your friends, other creative entrepreneurs and leaders who want to get their work to work? You can send them to gwtw.co to access every episode, as well as find all of the appropriate links to stream the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and more. You may have noticed in this podcast that I love talking about curiosity, but did you know I also like writing about it too? Each week I release my weekly curiosity thoughts in the Curiosity Lab. You can sign up today at the bottom of the show notes page at gwtw.co/257. I also recently released an email series for creative entrepreneurs who may be struggling with burnout, conformity, and mediocrity called The Curiosity Killers. Head to curiositykillers.com to learn more about this resource and sign up for this fun and serious look at why curiosity matters. Until next time, may creativity and curiosity fuel your life.